Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, it's Brian with 12 Pack Radio, and if you have listened to the last couple episodes, you will have noticed that there is a bit of a dip in audio quality. Normally our podcasts are excellent, and Rob has an awesome mic. My mic is pretty strong, but Rob's been on the road, and so what you'll notice is that there's a bit of a dip on that front, but we'll fix that as we continue to move forward. But we wanted to make sure to continue to get you our breakdowns of each team as we move to the beginning of the Pac-12 football season. So our apologies for the dip and delay, and you'll notice that there's like the crickets that Rob has outside that kind of messed with some of the audio stuff that I do to keep actually the sound clean. So anyway, all that stuff will be fixed, but we wanted to get you our Oregon and Stanford deep dive in addition to the episodes that we've done last time. We'll make sure to update the quality, I understand, but we wanted to continue to get you those episodes. So without further ado, here is our Oregon and Stanford preview.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world-famous two-time champs and feel the power! It's a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio, get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. This is a Sharp College Football podcast. Thanks for joining us. We are 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks away from college football, real college football, week zero college football, which is like, I mean, I'll take it, right? Like, I'll eat bad pizza. I'll eat bad pizza anytime over no pizza. And we are going to make sure to preview week zero, but that is neither here nor there. We are here to talk about Oregon football. We're going to take a deep dive into them, a deep dive into Stanford. We're going to talk AP college football poll, and we have some news. We had the news fairy dropped a giant bomb in an oral history of the Pac-12 network, which, spoiler alert, was freaking bonkers. And join me to talk about all of that is Rob Bowron from Sharp College Football. What's going on, Rob?
I'm excited. I mean, you're not excited for Nebraska and Northwestern to play in Dublin, Ireland?
Let's go. It's almost as good as didn't Stanford play Northwestern in like Australia once? I mean, it was so stupid. It's so ridiculous.
I mean, what are these two teams playing in Dublin? I mean, look, like they used to do that thing for they used to have like a Tokyo Bowl where they would like send teams to Tokyo to play every year. And I mean, admittedly, like there's no teams that you're like, oh yes, it makes sense, send them, right? Like to Tokyo. But like Nebraska and Northwestern, it's hard to imagine how some TV executive was like, yes, let's do this in Dublin.
In my brain, right, like the Pac-12, right, they were going to build this empire in China, and we'll talk about this empire in a second when we talk about the network, right, but there's this thing, it's like, we're going to be huge in China, and then I would like to think, Rob, that the UCLA basketball team that stole, like, a bunch of, you know, tchotchkes from some random store in Beijing, like, I would like to pretend in my mind that they single-handedly destroyed the Pac-12 empire.
Nothing is, like, a worse PR move than coming from, like, this, like, capitalist country, right, and just going over to, I mean, what is, you know, also a fairly capitalist country, and immediately stealing things, right? Like, are you serious, UCLA?
And yeah, it's fascinating. I guess that we should roll right into this news story that came out from The Athletic. It was an oral history of the Pac-12 network. And so I'll be frank here. I started the first quarter of it, and I'm like, this is very juicy. And if I continue to read this, it's going to be noon because I'm just going to be fuming over it. And so, Rob, I know that you took the deep dive. You went into you took the blue pill or whatever and jumped into that window. What nuggets came out of this? Because I've seen the notes on Twitter, and it doesn't look promising in terms of the leadership provided in the Conference of Champions.
No, I mean, so I think there's a couple of big takeaways that everyone should have. And some of this is also from people that I interact with and know on the Twitter machine. So the big early takeaway, of course, is like the Pac-12 made the decision, and we've talked about this, the decision to go it alone without bringing on an ESPN or a Fox to co-own the network and to help with negotiations. And I've had occasional Pac-12 fans tweet at me that that was not the case, that the Pac-12 had no offers. But Bob Thompson, the former head of the Fox Sports Regional Network, who helped to negotiate the original Pac-12 deal 10 years ago with Fox, he said, yeah, there were offers from both ESPN and Fox to co-own the Pac-12 network, and Larry Scott talked to presidents into launching seven networks all on their own. And like a lot of the story, and I think you probably read some of it, like tends to dive into like the starting of the Pac-12 networks, which was, you know, very often like, how do we start this from scratch? Like, you know, talking to people like Michael Yam, you know, formerly the Pac-12 networks, who had come over from ESPN, Ashley Adamson, you know, a lot of like familiar faces for Pac-12 fans from the Pac-12 networks. I talked to Rick Neuheisel. A lot of it is like, you know, what was it like as a startup, right? But it's funny because there's a point where they basically had a year to like try to, they knew they were going to do it. They had a year to try to get things started. They spent 7 months putting the leadership team together and like over marinating on that, unsurprisingly, with Larry Scott. And then they had to like sprint the final 5 months because they had actually accomplished nothing beyond putting the leadership team together. And then, so that was like, I think that's, I mean, that's sort of like, if you're going to go back and think of like the major faux pas, that's the major one. But then, and then there's no other way to put it. And then like Michael Crow enters the chat. So he's the ASU president. You know, he's been the ASU president for a long time. He was a huge Larry Scott supporter, probably his biggest supporter among, you know, the presidents and chancellors. There's a couple of good Michael Crow nuggets in there. And look, they really do like talk about how, you know, for women's sports, you know, it was really a game changer for like women's basketball for the Pac-12. And that's good. But they come back at their, and they basically say, and Michael Crow's like, yeah, we accomplished our goal. Our goal wasn't to make money. Our goal was to provide coverage for Olympic sports.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, which is just mind blowing. That you can still, I don't know, have that thought after clearly what has happened because of that, you know, with UCLA and USC gone. But he then, they also went into the story of DirecTV, which was like the long running, you know, like every question, every time Larry Scott steps in front of a microphone, his first question was, what about DirecTV, right? And some of it went into like, oh, you know, they didn't have, of course, an ESPN or Fox to help them do the negotiations. They had really expected Pac-12 alumni to be willing to cancel their DirecTV subscriptions. They didn't carry the Pac-12. That didn't happen. And then in 2015, there was an opening when when AT&T, who already had an existing contract with the Pac-12, bought DirecTV. And so in that opening, they were really close. They were actually writing the schedule of who was going to be covering the games that would be shown on DirecTV for the broadcasters. Like, it was known. Everybody in the Pac-12 offices knew this DirecTV deal was going to get signed, because the lawyers were just down in the hall, you know, banging out the final negotiations. And in order to, they're sort of in all of the contracts that the Pac-12 had signed, there was what some people like most favored nations. Basically, like if you sign somebody else for a lower carriage rate, then everybody now gets that rate, right? So like that's part of like the Pac-12 wasn't going to give DirecTV a better deal, because then they'd have to offer the same better deal to everyone else.
Yeah.
So they kind of dug in their heels on it. So AT&T comes back and says, fine, we'll sign this deal. But basically, like, you're going to kick us back some money on, you know, around the edges. And that is, each campus would have had to sign up for seven figures in AT&T, like, internet and cell phone services, right? And they put this deal in front of the presidents, and they turned it down. And at this time, the Pac-12 has something like 16 or 18 million subscribers. Adding DirecTV would have more than doubled the subscriber base, because DirecTV would have brought in 19 million subscribers just on their own. And in doing this, they turned it down each. And some of you may be thinking, like, seven figures, like, that's millions of dollars. And that's true. Seven figures is anywhere between $1 and $9,999,000, right?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of money. I looked it up. Like, the University of Arizona, which is, I mean, like most Pac-12 universities, is a top research university, generates a lot of revenue. They had an annual revenue in 2015 of $1.85 billion. Like, seven figures is a rounding error for what IT at the University of Arizona probably spent that year. You know, like, you can hide $5 or $6 million in your IT budget. You know. And the president's turned this down, and that could have been a real game changer, because at that point, the Pac-12 networks were generating, and over the life of the networks, they generated, I think, less than $10 million in revenue per school.
Yeah.
It's just infuriating to read this, because, like, look, the Pac-12 certainly has some handicaps, right? Like, they have some positives, too. But it's infuriating to read this because a bunch of people that really had no idea of what actually is driving things, right? Of like, oh, we want to showcase the non-revenue sports, but forgetting completely what is actually the revenue model that underlies,
like, all of this. What allows your Olympic sports to be possible? What makes your women's sports thrive, right? Is the investment from your football and your basketball programs. And,
yeah.
And with the football, with all caps, like, football and basketball programs. The thing that was frustrating is, like, even, gosh, was this like 2015 or 2016? Like, it was pretty, it might've even been later than that, where still Larry Scott, you know, it's football week. It's the Pac-12, you know, opening media days. And Larry Scott opens with, like, the rowing team from Stanford. And it just highlighted for me just the complete oblivious look at what actually drives revenue in sports. And, like, and I think for some people that listen to this, this is kind of tedious. But, like, the reason that your football program is now struggling in a conference that that has had poor leadership for a while, I mean, this is a big reason why. And, you know, like, you can't undo it. And we are where we are, but, like, when people ask, like, why did USC and UCLA leave? Well, like, this is a reason why. And, it was fascinating. Were there any other nuggets in there that, like, really jumped out as being particularly interesting? Because, we've been doing this show for years, and the number one thing that always popped up for years was, like, we're not on DirecTV. Like,
right.
that was the number one comment that we got, and now we know why. And it was because, like, the universities weren't willing to kick over. They weren't willing to, you know, borrow a little bit to pay Paul, you know? It's like,
right.
And giving up that for – and you have to remember, too, the Pac-12, as this was going on, you know, as these very decisions were going on, was a really good conference. Like, there were multiple years where you had Oregon State, like, winning 10 games and going to, like, major bowl games. USC was, like, still really strong. I mean, like, the Pac-12 was for a while a very, very powerful conference that has been on the decline for years. And, like, as that was happening, I'm sure I'm getting the timeline off by a couple of years, but, like, the big point being, there was a moment where this conference could have been really, really strong. And when you take a look at the actual decisions that got us to where we are, where it's like, oh crap, like, maybe we'll take San Diego State. We're not, by the way, we're not. But, like, you know, that kind of thinking, this is the reason why. But was there anything else that, like, really jumped out on the page in that story?
No, I mean, like, I don't want to, I mean, like, a lot of it, again, you know, is truly, like, you know, I mean, and we've had Michael Yam on the show before, you know, like, you know, and you know, really interesting, funny stories like Rick Neuheisel, like as he knows he's going to get fired by UCLA, Larry Scott comes over at halftime or like, you know, at the end of the game and just makes a pitch to him about joining Pac-12 Network, you know, like, but like most of it, the majority, like the stuff that jumps out, if you're like us, like very engaged Pac-12 fans, you know, / media-ish, you know, is the real insane frustration, like the fact that like Michael Crow still doesn't get it, right?
Yeah.
like the person outside of Larry Scott that is probably most responsible for like where we are with the Pac-12 is still wandering around like, oh, we hit our goals with the Pac-12 Network. Like, we were able to showcase rowing.
Yeah, and it's not even like it's not the journey, it's the friends we made along the way. It's not even that. It's like, we did it, y'all. Like, that's kind of the
I know. Well, and then there's the stuff of, like, where he's in there. And, I mean, I got to try to keep talking and find it. He's in there, and he's got this just fantastic quote. But he called the DirecTV, he said the DirecTV deal was like a deal with uninteresting people. just you poncy, arrogant, old goofball. Like you empowered Larry Scott, one of the most delusional, you know, people to ever get involved in college sports and perhaps major sports. You empowered him to come in and run this conference, gave him a truckload of money, gave him a loan that I don't think he paid back on buying a house in San Francisco, you know, like, and all of that. And you're like, it was what really matters is we were able to showcase the fencing team.
Oh my gosh. No, it's frustrating and bad. And like, it is that Schadenfreude, like where it's, you know, I guess, you know, you read it and you, it is nice that happened. And if you haven't had a chance, it's on The Athletic. It's totally worth it. Like, pay the dollar subscription to, you know, get access to it, because it is fascinating to see the direction that the conference could have gone compared to the direction that it did go. Anything else on that, Rob, before we hop over to the AP poll and do some dives on the teams this year?
No, let's hop over.
Yeah, well, this one's for you, Michael Crow. Thanks for partying. Let's talk AP poll here. It just briefly, because, you know, like this is, I do think that the preseason polls are fascinating because, you know, some people say that they don't matter. I do think that they matter because it keeps the teams that are in that top five. If you keep winning, you just stay there. And I know right. that they're mixing in the computers. They have the playoff committee and stuff. But like this is still a product run by people, and the decisions are made by people after they got rid of the computers. And so if you're in that top five or even like top 10, That's a very good sign. Taking a look at what we have here on the Pac-12 side, you know, Utah clocks in at the highest rating at number 7.
Yep.
Oregon at 11, USC at 14, and that's it. You know,
that's
kind of him looking through. I'm like, oh wow, that's and I'm trying to look to see if any other votes. You know, the others voting.
UCLA got 2.
Yeah. Damn.
Wow.
That's it.
That was it.
Yeah. Well, that's rough. Good times here. I was worried because, like, at the very beginning, I had seen the top 10, and I missed Utah for a second. I was like, oh, no, is Utah not in the top 10? They're in at 7, and I think that's great. It puts them in a position where if they win out, they are on the radar of these voters and of the committee, and they really have a chance at a national title, a playoff. I wouldn't say a national title, but they have a chance to make the playoff for the first time, what, since 20 – when did Washington go, 2014? It's been a hot
2016.
Minute.
It's been a bit.
It always reminds me of like blue buds, and I use air quotes, college basketball programs, and then you look and see it's like, oh snap, they haven't won a title or made a Final Four in like 20 years. The Pac-12 isn't that bad yet, but that Washington, you know, playoff performance is starting to look real far in that rearview mirror. So I don't know. Like, what do you think? Do you think these were appropriate rankings for these teams, and do you think there should have been anybody else that got thrown in the others voting or in the fold?
Yeah, I mean, I actually largely agree with these. I mean, BetaRank has Utah at 8 projected coming into this season. It's got Oregon at 14. And then we've talked about this, right? Like, it does, like, you know, Beta Rank's underrating USC at 34. And that is, you know, a result of not seeing the coaching change. And I don't think really able to handle the volume of transfers. I don't think the projection models, I'm going to have to get some more years like this where we have a ton of transfers coming in and maybe we get better data on transfers.
Yeah.
To really be able to handle it. But USC is likely underrated. I don't, like, 14 feels about right. I mean, like, I think people are underrating how good Caleb Williams is, how good this offense will likely be. It's going to be a huge step up with Lincoln Riley calling plays. But, you know, like, I think it's right to have them. They're not a top 10 team. I don't think you can come in with the kind of defensive questions they have and call them a top 10 team.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I was glad to see that the Pac-12 East champion BYU was in the top 25. I think they could have an interesting year here. So it's fun to see them, you know, pop through in the top 20, 25 on their front. Oregon at 11, I thought was a bit much. I would
it's a bit high.
Yeah.
I mean, not bad, but
it gets it. It's all relative, right? Like, for me, just visually seeing them at 11, where it's, you know, like, the defense was not great last year. They get a new coordinator,
yeah,
and I think he's going to improve the defense. But let's see what they do on the offensive side. They have Bo Nix and all that kind of stuff. But, like, but everything's relative. Then you kind of look at, well, who are these teams clumped with, right? Like, Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State, NC State, Michigan State, Miami. I mean, like, I do. Then when you put those teams in context, and I'm like, well, yeah, maybe they should be at 11. I do think that they're.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Baylor is a team that's got some serious regression possibility. They lose nearly all their skill position players. They lose a ton off of that defense. Oklahoma State, they lose a mountain off of the defense. They lose their great defensive coordinator off to Ohio State. Now, they do replace him with Derek Mason, but that's still Spencer Sanders running a not very good offense at number 12.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I like NC State around 13. I've got them at 16. I think they're a team that has real upside coming into the season, maybe. I think Michigan State's overrated. They got pretty lucky last
absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
But Miami, you know, like, Miami might be a little high, but not too bad. I'm really interested, like, you know, there's some teams like Arkansas, Kentucky. I was a little surprised Tennessee wasn't rated. But Arkansas and Kentucky are teams like that I think could be pretty good this season, actually. And, like, Arkansas, you know, like, has really made strides under Sam Pittman. They could be fun.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't think that there's anybody really in the Pac-12 that has else that would have a potential claim to be in the top 25 heading into this season.
There is a world, like, if there's two teams that I think can get there, I think it is UCLA. It's probably Washington is the other one.
Yes,
that,
I mean, like, could get there in the over the years.
Yeah, but it makes sense for them not to get the votes at that. Well, I was surprised, frankly, that UCLA didn't get more votes, just given the year that they had last year. They bring back DTR. I get that the defense sucks, but I mean, like, when you group them with other teams that are, like, in that camp, right? Kansas State, South Carolina, App State, Boise State, North Carolina. Like, if those teams play UCLA in a bowl game, I'm not like, oh, that's a good game, right? Whereas if Oregon, you know, if it's Oregon, Oklahoma State, Oregon, Baylor, Oregon, Oklahoma, Oregon, Michigan, I'm like, oh, that'll be a good game, you know? I was surprised that UCLA was further down on that front. I totally get why Washington didn't get the votes, but I do think that they're a team that can come up and pop somebody. And then that's...
I'm surprised they didn't get any votes.
I mean, they were foreign. Well, I guess so is USC,
no,
right?
But I mean, you look at the talent. You look at the talent on that roster, right? I mean, and there's some teams that were not great last season who are, you know, have talented roster. Like, North Carolina wasn't great last year, and they lose Sam Howell, you know?
Yeah.
And like, Florida fired their head coach too, and they weren't great this season. They got 14, but I mean, you know, I think Auburn got 15 votes. Like, I think Washington. I'm surprised they got zero votes. Let's put it that way. Actually, as I go through here, you know who, like, really got jobbed is Mississippi State.
Where are they not in here?
They are in the others receiving votes.
Oh, hot damn! That team's going to be a top 20 team for sure. Like, and it might be better than that.
Like, they were – so we had them last year. They had the number 9 overall offense in Beta Rank. They return a ton on offense. They were number 37 on defense, and they were 119 in special teams. And, like, I fully expect special teams to not drag them down a little bit coming to this year. And we've talked about, like, with Zach Arnett, maybe we haven't talked about it a lot, but, like, in previewing that game that they're going to have against Arizona, Zach Arnett comes out at Rocky Long 3-3-5 school. Their defense was at 37 last season. I expect them to improve. Like, they can be really good. And Will Hall plays a bit like that Gardner Minshew version of that Mike Leach offense, where he really distributes the ball around, really high completion percentage, not a lot of shots downfield, but they should be really good.
Yeah. The one thing that I appreciated from last year and subsequent years will be the inexplicable bowl game and the poor play in the beginning of the year against stupid teams. And, like, it's very, very entertaining to see the heads explode of SEC fans when Mississippi State just totally craps the bed in a bowl game, or in because that's Leach, right? Obviously he gets the players. The players are going to be better than Washington State, but that culture, whether it's special teams, bowl games, or looking down at opponents, that I just, until I see that change, I'm going to enjoy every bit of it, and it's the best. It's one of the best parts about college football, and it's great to see an even more passionate fan base melt down when it happens because they haven't figured it out yet. So that, I think that's great. But I agree with you. I think you know, Mississippi State being in the top 20 at least, I do think that they got jobbed and not even being in that top 25 even. So any other teams on here? I mean, like, right. I mean, at the top, it's Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Notre Dame. I thought was interesting at five. That I don't think they belong there. Then it's
Texas. I think Notre Dame's like a top 10 team. I don't know if they're a top 5 team.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. New coach, not new scheme, but new coach. Like, let's see if he can get it together there. I hope he does, right? Like, it's just, you know, seems like he's just really excited to be part of that program, but, like, man, you hire a 34-year-old or whatever it is, like, you know, you got to sometimes you got to learn your lumps, and sometimes, you know, you get the prodigy. So,
well, he's an interesting one because in some ways, like, I feel like we've watched this a lot recently, right? So, like, new coach gets the job and they keep on somebody, or they get handed somebody, you know, for their coordinator. But he kept on Tommy Rees, who some people really like. I haven't seen him put up really good offensive numbers. Everybody sort of claims it's like Brian Kelly holding him back. We'll see. Brian Kelly's gone. You know, like, he should have a really free hand to run that offense. They weren't that impressive.
Yeah.
Last season. I don't know. I mean, I will say, like, Marcus Freeman, that defense was really good last year, and they should be pretty good again. But I think the Buckeyes are going to smoke them. You know, it was interesting. Did you see the news today that Miles Brennan is retiring? And that may be from injury at LSU. But he was told he wasn't going to be the starter. And I feel like we're this much closer to, like, Jaden Daniels starting at LSU.
That is wild to me. And it's really frustrating also at the same time, because I think he was planning on leaving LSU, right? They talked him back.
He was. He's going to transfer.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, there is so much value in getting a college football Sherpa. Right, like, pay him whatever you need to pay him to be like, nope, don't listen to him, he's full of crap, or, you know, like, this offense is garbage and you don't need to be a part of this right now, like, you know, and again, pointing back to Oregon State, the fact that Jonathan Smith doesn't have a good quarterback at Oregon State makes me want to throw something through my window.
Like, you know? Miles Brennan, people under, like, I mean, because that whole LSU season in 2020 was just, like, epic disaster, right?
Yeah.
But the offense for the couple of games when he was healthy was pretty good. And it was really after he got injured that the wheels completely fell off. And of course, then everyone's also realized, like, man, Bo Pelini, not the answer. If you had Miles Brennan on this Oregon State team, like, oh buddy, like, we'd be talking about, like, the Beavers as, like, a dark horse in the North, right?
Well, yeah, that, and if you're looking at LSU, man, like, I really do want to see Delora start, just for the you know, is it a chicken or the egg thing, right? Is it just poor coaching, or does he really have it? Because I'd like to see him put it together, but we were fairly down on him from the start, and not to pick on him, like, you know, he was a baller at big moments his freshman year. And then kind of regressed. And I want him to end it. Like, I want him to go to the NFL and be awesome. But, like, I just, I don't know. Like, I would. We'll see if it was him or if it was the coaching staff, because he goes to LSU, and if he's the starter, man, we'll find out right away. You know what the problem
was. It's funny because he's like prototypical. Like, everybody has complained for the long. Like, everybody's like, oh, Brian Kelly, like, hasn't had an NFL type quarterback at Notre Dame. And I'm like, Brian Kelly, like, this is, it's not like he's like randomly assigned quarterbacks. Like, he recruits these dudes.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
He goes out and finds these guys. And he's got, you know, like, he had Brennan, who's more of a prototypical, you know, drop back passer. And he's, you know, he's got that, the Walker Howard, you know, like, QB coming in. And then somebody else that they had, I think, transferred in from Texas A&M. Anyway, he has all these options, right? And he brings in freaking Jaden Daniels, who looks and plays just like every schlep he's had at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, which is, like, kind of athletic, not a huge arm, right? Not the most accurate downfield passer. It's, you know, mostly dink and dunk with short stuff, right? And I'm like, what? Like, as soon as Jaden Daniels transferred there, you're like, oh, I can see this coming a mile away, right? Like, we know it's going to happen. Yeah. But it's still kind of shocking to see it because, I mean, the talent around, I mean, it's like, is Nussmeier still there? Now I'm, like, really spacing, like.
I think it's
probably, yeah, and Nussmeier's still pretty good. I mean, like, they got a bunch of guys that are still, you know, like, you would definitely think of as, like, you know, being ahead of Daniels. But like I said, like, Daniels really fits with what they like to, Den Brock and Kelly have liked to do in the past.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. And, a couple other just notes from camp. I need to do my due diligence a little bit. I've been following as much as I can. Some news out of ASU where their defensive end that they were really excited about ended up getting injured. And that's a bummer because I guess if there's going to be one injury, the defensive line for ASU, it was Michael Mattis, by the way, the defensive end. That's the one area where I think it's okay to have an injury because I do think the line will be a strength. And we talked about that in our ASU preview. So just keep a lookout for that. We'll continue to talk through some fall camp stuff as we go, but we're going to get to the point where we're going to know who the starters are. We're already seeing quarterbacks transferring and that kind of news starting to crack through. So very interested in the final depth charts as we move forward. But Rob, let's talk about Oregon and let's talk about Stanford. We're going to do deep dives into both teams. Let's do it right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, he's declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk Stanford first. We're going to talk Stanford first. A team that really burned me last year, Rob. I mean, they stuck that knife in the back and they shivved it up through the liver into my lung. Like, that, it was rough, man. Because
the Max hangover, man. Like, continually talking you into the Cardinal.
Oh my gosh, I was so bummed about that. Tanner McKee, obviously the quarterback coming in, and you know, last year the thing with Stanford last year was I knew what I was getting into. I knew that they were gonna have a pretty good quarterback, decent wide receivers, no run game, and no defense.
Start like, Jack West in that game against Kansas State.
Oh Lord Almighty! Yeah, that was awful. That was just a disaster. Gosh, talk about bad decisions. Holy Moses! But I'm like, oh, whatever. They'll win three games. Or I think the 3.5 was the win total. They go out, they beat Oregon, and I'm like sitting pretty. You know, I'm already counting my money, and they just basically don't win a game after that. Now, there were injuries, right? Tanner McKee is hurt. You have the wide receivers basically all out at some point in time. But the Stanford team, like, right, if you don't have a quarterback and your wide receivers are bad, there's nothing else on this team that has a value, basically, when it comes to putting together a college football team, regardless of the talent that you see on paper. It's frustrating. But let's start with a quarterback, right? Tanner McKee returns. I mean, he's got to be one of the top four quarterbacks in the league, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, people are going to talk about him, I think rightfully so, as an NFL draft pick. I mean, I don't think we're going to, like, unless something magical happens, I don't think we're talking about, like, a day one or two pick. But, you know, a guy who's, you know, going to go to the combine, I mean, may go to the combine, definitely is going to get evaluated. You know, prototypical drop back passer, big, strong guy, can really, you know, make all of the NFL throws, but plays for Stanford. doesn't have a running game to support him anymore.
I think it's a strength. You know, I was talking with our friend Hithloday. He was talking about doing some film study on McKee, and you know, we saw with our own eyes, like, hey, he's good, right? Like, this is somebody that is incredibly competent. He reminds me of who's the Davis Mills, right? Where we were watching Davis Mills, I'm like, that guy's good. The rest of the team sucks, but he's good. McKee's like that, 65% completion rate, 15 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He averaged about 7.5 yards a pass. Not afraid to throw it down the field if he can. The one thing that Hithloday really said jumped out in his film study was the unflinching resistance that McKee has to pressure. I mean, basically he was saying, like, that guy would stay in the pocket and multiple times, where any human being would be like, dear Lord Almighty, get me out of here. McKee's like, I'm going to throw this, and there's nothing you can do about it. That, I appreciate that. That is a superpower.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, he's like, like we talked about, like, he's a really good quarterback and a guy that I think could really, you know, do some damage this year if he gets this. Like, but I think what we talk about with McKee, and maybe even if the numbers don't end up being great, I still think he ends up, because of the tape, you know, and, you know, because of, you know, his, I mean, he was a top recruit when they landed him. And what he can do physically, like, you like, I think you still like him to be an NFL pick, but they really need the pass catchers to step up and help him.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll talk about those. I think one of the things that is worrisome, though, is who's behind him. And it's always hard with Stanford football because their spring game is like basically a walk-on showcase, like, every year.
Yeah.
And you just, there's no, like, nobody covers the program. There's not a lot of news out of the spring game. So I'm assuming to be Ari Paytu, and I've seen a little bit of him, and I have not been impressed. So McKee goes down, and I think you have problems now. And you have to take that into account with Stanford, because that line, you know, like, we'll see. And I know they return a lot, but McKee goes down, that offense totally collapses. You know, we'll go to the wide receivers, Rob. On paper, this is a good group. Michael Wilson, Bryson Tremaine, Elijah Higgins, John Humphreys. These are all, like, blue chip wide receivers. And man, I bought in last year. Now, they did, a lot of them got hurt at different moments throughout the season. Plus they have their tight ends, right? Like, on paper, they should be able to put up a lot of yards, but they all got to stay healthy. And even so, like, anyway, I would assume you would agree that the receiving core from the tight end to the wide receivers is a strength.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's some guys, like, I mean, like you mentioned, like, there's some guys that they have signed in the last couple seasons. I mean, but, like, their last two big wide receiver recruits were in 2019 and 2020, and they haven't really signed a four-star wide receiver since. And that's your 21 and 22 classes. You know, like, Elijah Higgins is probably their biggest signing. He was the headliner of their 2019 class. But he's got, I mean, they absolutely were relying on it. And Humphreys is the other four-star. Those are guys that have to step up, because, like, the other guys, you start getting into, like, high three-star guys, right? And, you know, as much as for lack of a better way to put it, like, they don't run the ball all that well anymore, right? Like, this has to be the engine of the offense. These guys have to get open. They really, really struggled with it last year.
I do think one of the players that really was hampered by injuries and stuff is Michael Wilson. Right, in 2019, he was their top pass catcher.
Yeah.
And I just expect him to get better over time. I mean, he was the top pass catcher with Simi Fehoko on that wide receiving corps.
Like, yeah.
He's good. He returns. I do think that there is a world where Stanford this year is playing in a lot of shootout. You know, that's if Shaw is willing to open it up a little bit, which he has in the past. Like, I think people all like the go-to adage for Stanford is like, oh, you know, grounded pound and stuff. Like they are like, to his credit, there's been a lot of bad things that David Shaw mixing the wide receiver and the coach that David Shaw has done. This is not one of them. I do think that he's willing to throw the ball if he has the receivers. I would very much like for them to do that. But then when you go from that, like when you take a look at the running game, I mean, it's a disaster and it will continue to be a disaster. Like I just don't like, again, on paper, you look at this, you go, oh wow, they returned basically their offensive line. But they lose Austin Jones, who was probably pretty good. We'll find out here pretty soon at USC. And they do have, like, you know, E.J. Smith is likely going to be the white. But to me,
Pro Football Focus has him as a breakout candidate this year.
Oh, well, that's stupid. That's stupid.
No, I mean, I know, but I mean, like you love what you see on tape from him, right? And then your eyes come back out to watch the Stanford offensive line run block and you're like, oh, there's not much to go.
And there are running backs that can cover up for the sins of the offensive line sometimes.
Right.
And even that is bad. But when you have a running back that doesn't cover up anything, that's a problem. So like when we end up, you know, summing up Stanford, EJ Smith is by far the person I am most interested in. Like, can he jump back or do a little like little shuffle step and get past that defensive end that's running right down his throat, right? In order to turn a 4-yard loss into a 3-yard gain. But I'm not expecting him to get that 10-yard gain, right? Like, I just think this is going to be a mess again.
No, and the numbers look decent, right, for a lot of these guys in the Stanford backs, right? Both Nathaniel Pete and E.J. Smith averaged over 5 per carry last year. You know, then Austin Jones, who was, you know, more of their workhorse back, he got 3.53, which tells you something, right, of like when Pete Smith made it into the game. But I think people, you can read too much into that, right? Like, Stanford mostly played really, I mean, some of the Pac-12 run defenses were horrendous last year. And so, yeah, sure. Like, the numbers may look okay, but like Stanford's offense didn't put up a lot of points, you know, and they haven't really been able to run the ball effectively, really effectively in years. I'm skeptical of Smith as a breakout. I mean, if he is, I feel like it's in spite of, because they haven't been, since you know, their old offensive coordinator and offensive line coach went off to be the head coach at Rice, they really have struggled to run the ball effectively and with their run blocking and run scheme.
Yeah, this is a weakness. The offensive line is a weakness. I know they continue to recruit well on the offensive line, but it doesn't matter. It reminds me of USC's line, right? They kept bringing in these 4- and 5-star guys. It doesn't matter. Like, you have to be able to coach them and get them to do, you know, what they have the potential to do. And I just haven't seen that for 4 years now. And it started that second year where Bryce Love, right, was back, right?
Yep.
The year before, they have the offensive line coach. That guy was averaging like 7 to 9 yards a carry. It was something stupid. It was like some ridiculous number. The offensive line coach leaves, and that ever since then, it's been a mess, and that's a problem. So, and the thing that worries me, because like it's so frustrating, because I want Stanford to be so good. Like I think David Shaw like is good. I loved what he was able to do to continue the work that Harbaugh did when he left. He still is bringing talent to Stanford. It's just, and I want to bet on him because I see with my eyes on paper what this team should be. But this year, even more so than last year, I'm worried because, like, let's say there's a world where the rushing game actually comes together and it's like, you know, it's a 50, you know, they're ranked 50 in the country at rushing. Like, Stanford could be good, but their defense is so bad that it's not going to matter. Like, that's the thing that
drives me. I mean, look, there's a world that I think, to your point, right, where Michael Wilson is back healthy and is really back to his old self, right? And, you know, Higgins and John Humphreys are able to provide
you know, something extra there. The tight ends are still pretty good. But yeah, then you flip it over and you still have the same problem, defensive coordinator and coaching outside of Dwayne Akina, right?
Well, even with Akina, that secondary has been kind of crappy the last couple of years. I mean, I think if you ask anybody about Dwayne Akina, they're all going to say he's a good coach. At the same time, right. I'm looking at the production of that secondary over the last couple of years. And like, yes, they've had stars on that, you know, like I'm not saying that he hasn't produced and developed good players, but as a unit, you know, for all the like and the support that we've internally, like, you know, baked in to Akina being in the secondary, it still hasn't been good.
No, I mean, I think where you see his coaching is still being able to produce stars. Like Blue Kelly is really good.
Yeah.
And he's going to be really good again this year. They don't get pressure on the quarterback like they need to. And these guys are just left hanging, right? Yeah. I mean, and this is something that I feel like underneath all of the bad on Stanford's defense last season, like Gabe Reed was pretty good. You know, he had 33 tackles, you know, but he also, he had 10 tackles for a loss. I actually think him going to Utah, like that really, him not coming back really hurts.
Yeah. And now you're getting to the phase where they haven't recruited particularly well up the center.
And they don't coach well.
They
right?
don't like, coach well. And like now they're relying on freshmen and sophomores,
yeah.
mostly freshmen, right? Like, and they have recruited well at the edge. And they do, you know, periodically bring in linebackers. Their recruiting class this year is great. But yeah. The recruiting class last year was pretty darn good. But now you're relying on those players with bad coaching rather than relying on, like, experienced 5-star and 4-star blue-chip players and bad coaching, right? Like, I mean, how far down was their defense last year? Like, can it get worse? Like, I can, right? Like, I don't know.
I mean, you think, can this get any worse for Stanford? I mean, but I feel like we've been sort of having this conversation about them for a bit. Which, I mean, they were at 111 on defense last season. Like, that's one of their worst numbers they put up. I would expect them to be better than 111. But they've mostly been in, like, the 70s or 80s with Lance Anderson, right? Like, what is better? Like, still an extremely bad Power 5 defense.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I guess, you know, you have, like, Anthony Franklin and Zach Buckley and, like, on the ends. But again, like, Tobin Phillips is probably going to be your tackle. And there's really nobody proven behind him. And that's a problem. I don't trust the linebackers now. I guess if there's one strength of this defense, it could be the secondary, right? That, like you mentioned, Caillou Blue
Kelly. It's the corners. It's problems. Like, I mean, I'm willing to give the safeties the benefit of the doubt and give them like a B minus B. Yeah. I think the corners are probably B plus, but the fact that they're going to be left out there hanging in coverage with like very little pass rush to like support them. And then like you might have to bring they might have to start creeping the safeties down to support in the run game. Like, yeah, that's a problem, right? Like they're gonna end up looking bad because the coaching has just been so bad.
Yeah, the one like so they do bring in Patrick Fields at safety who will likely start.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, but like you're saying, right? Like if you've had a football team whose defensive line cannot get to the quarterback. You know how frustrating it is, like when you're watching your secondary try to catch up people, because when it's a one-on-one matchup, one person knows the direction that they're going and the other one doesn't. Right?
Right.
There's an inherent advantage there, and so you got to pray to God for those first 4 seconds, and then after that, it's kind of a disaster. So
you can only ask your guys to cover right for so long. Like it's only possible to really cover for so long, you know, out there and. Two, if you ask them to do that too many times, like they're, you know, the best players are going to get burned.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a little bit depressing, right? The Stanford, but I mean, it's just, it kind of is what it is. And there was, I forget what podcast I was listening to, but like kind of basically the question was if Shaw goes 3-10 again or 3-9 or whatever, does he get fired? I think the answer is no, but you finally see Anderson and possibly what's his face up in the play caller on the offense.
To Peter Pritchard, yeah.
I think you finally I mean, like, I assumed that this would happen last year and the year before that, but it hasn't. But I think finally that happens, but you still have Shaw there. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, he did, the offensive line coaching had been so bad that he finally did, make a little bit of a change and bring in somebody new, at least at the offensive line. But, Lance Anderson's been there for almost Shaw's entire career, right? I mean, and he's been hideous, that's where, if you look at the staff, you're kind of going through and you're thinking, like, all right, is there, who do you keep? Right? If you were going through this, you'd say, yes, I would keep Dwayne Aquino, probably, right? Like, really good recruiter, one of the most respected, position coaches in all of college football. Maybe you keep Ron Gold, the running backs coach, depending on where the offensive line, because, Terry Heffernan has been there for a little bit, but they are sort of hoping he turns things around. But, and maybe Bobby Kennedy, a wide receiver, but Reynolds, their defensive line coach, they've got, two linebackers coaches that are, I think Lance Anderson's one of those, but they all got to go, right? That's the real problem. As you're going through here, and Shaw's been, just remarkably, I think the one that stands out is we've been talking about, Jerry as an RO and guys that sort of had to go, right? I'm surprised Marshall Yates lasted as long as he did. Lance Anderson's been there longer than any of those guys.
Yeah.
It's by a long shot. And his returns have gotten worse basically every year.
Yeah, and it's, last thing on them, we'll go to Oregon here, but it hurts the conference, right? When we talk about, teams and their commitment to football, right? And I get it, right? Stanford's an academic school. I get all that stuff. But I think that some of the fixes to get them from being like a 3-9 team for them to be like a 6-5, 7-5 team, go into a bowl game. It's not rocket science. You just need you already can recruit. It's a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful school. It's one of the top schools in the country. It's in Palo Alto. And there's just no commitment to being we need to make a change. And, I'm hoping that they go 1-11 so that they can either 1-11 or 7-5. Let's make a big improvement or bottom out. So we know that there's a change coming.
It's frustrating too, because we talk about this, right? Stanford has a bit more of a national recruiting footprint, but it is still largely Western and it is still pretty California heavy. Right.
Yeah.
And the Stanford is, some people may defend it. Stanford's the academic crown jewel within the Pac-12, but there's some really good universities behind Stanford in the Pac-12. And it's not Stanford bringing in these guys and just utterly wasting them is bad for the conference, right? It's bad for the conference for good California high school football players to go into the black hole that Stanford football has become.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Well, let's go from a team that will likely bottom out to a team that is quite interesting. Let's talk about Oregon, and let's do it right after this. All right, we're back. We're talking Oregon football, a team that is ranked in the top 15, like we mentioned, the AP football poll. Bo Nix, Byron Cardwell, we got some interesting – There's talent here. They got new coaching staff. It's a new regime. It's a new era, but they still do have the offensive line. There's a lot here to make the case that, look, this team is going to be very good this year. But there's a lot of change also at the same time that makes me sometimes put my foot off that gas pedal here. We got to start with Bo Nix, right? I think it's bad that Ty Thompson, right, five-star top five quarterback that they signed, wasn't able to beat out Anthony Brown last year or even push.
Right.
And then B, the coaching staff was like, yeah, this isn't going to work. We're going to bring in Bo Nix. So I think if Nix gets hurt, then there are problems for this offense. With that said, Nix didn't have a bad year last year. I think I think that there's a floor here for like in a pretty high floor for Knicks. But I'm curious what you think and whether you think he's a strength or not.
I mean, look, I think Knicks is a strength. I mean, like, I think I think QB is a strength for Oregon. I think a lot, unbeknownst to our Pac-12 listeners, I sometimes like to irritate UCF fans by talking about, like, that Gus Malzahn was kind of a bad hire. And a lot of it was, like, that Auburn offense in the last couple of years for Malzahn really, really stagnated. Malzahn, you know, I think Bo Nix struggled as Malzahn's offense struggled, right? And teams really had his number. So I think last season he was better than he had been under Malzahn. And it's not as if like they had like amazing play calling last year. It's probably be better than they will this year at Auburn offensively. But I thought Nix did fine, and he did it. Like, I mean, the kind of defenses he's going to largely face in the Pac-12 are going to be a step down from what he was seeing in the SEC for the most part, right? Like, the Pac-12 has some work to do on defense.
Yeah, Nix. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but I mean, like, but after that, like, there's look. Even if Ty Thompson doesn't become a day one NFL pick, which I think is a disappointment when you sign a 5-star Herald QB like that, like. There's still a bunch of guys that are really, which could still be really good college quarterbacks.
We'll see. I mean, like, how many years have we said Jay Butterfield, right? Like, where is
how many times have we had some random Oregon fan be like, you're forgetting about Jay Butterfield?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Like, we'll throw him in there, too.
I would like for Jay Butterfield to be a thing. But I'm not sure if that's
if Jay Butterfield could be spoken into existence, like I would have had it heckled at me at this point.
I'd be all in on that. I disagree with you a little bit. Where if Nix goes down, I'm worried about this offense, because on paper we have players that are blue chip high pedigree players, but they have not once in this entire time shown me that they're able to do anything. And if there's one year where they really had a chance, it was last year, and they just were non-factors. But taking a look at Nix, right, last year, like you mentioned, he had a good year. 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 7 yards a pass. He's going to give you about a 2-to-1 touchdown reception rate with about 400 yards on the ground, a couple touchdowns. The worry is, and this has kind of been the thing with Nix for a while, it's the accuracy, right?
Yeah.
He's never thrown above 61% in terms of his accuracy.
Yeah.
And he does make boneheaded plays in big, big moments. And look, it's a small sample size, so maybe it just was bad luck and, whatever. But we've had three and a half years, with him. And I do think that he's going to be better than what they had with Anthony Brown. And I do think that this offense is going to be decent. I would say having him is a strength, but I think the ceiling is going to be low. Is that fair?
I mean, Auburn's offense graded out at 27 last year in beta rank, and they were 27 in effective pass, 40 in effective rush. Like, they didn't rely on the run game a lot, or they couldn't rely on it a lot. What they were really pretty good at was avoiding three and outs, avoiding turnovers last season. I mean, Nix really took a step forward, I think, in that mark. And then they were a fairly explosive offense, 23. They just weren't super efficient, like 57 in drive efficiency. I think you can get something out of Nix, and I think with what they're likely going to run, as an offense, which will likely be more of a rushing offense, than they've run in the past, with Dillingham. Dillingham is going to be. Dillingham, I don't expect to be as much. I mean, he's worked for a variety of guys. I don't expect him to be running like the full Norvell, out there like throwing it around like Norvell was at Memphis. I think they're going to run the ball a bit. I think they're going to rely on Nix in that effect. And I think that could work. I mean, but that may be why Nix is likely going to get ahead of Thompson, who is not really a dual threat quarterback, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, like, we'll see. Like, I just haven't seen enough of him to know what I'm getting out of him. But yeah.
I mean, it's crazy last season because like the one thing that Anthony Brown really brought to that offense. I mean, he had completed it at a high rate. He didn't get the ball down like terribly far down the field very often. But was the, I mean, they were a much better. Oregon was a really good rushing team last season, and that's what Brown really brought to the table. It's just, it's crazy to think of, like, what Ty Thompson could bring with his arm couldn't outweigh what Brown was bringing to the table running the football.
Yeah. I'm curious what the running game is, because I love Byron Cardwell. Like, I'm they lose Troy Dye, and that hurts, right? Because, like, I think he was better than I had anticipated him being, and really had an incredibly productive career.
He didn't wear gloves.
Yeah, had a productive, you know, productive year last year for them. He goes over to USC. They lose him. Cardwell was super fun, like fast and young as a freshman. He jumps in. He's doing a lot of stuff. But I don't know. Like, you know, what do you think about what they're able to do? They bring in some transfers, you know, Minnesota running back. They bring in
Gerving. He's pretty good.
Yeah. Western Kentucky. They bring another back there, too. So it's not like they're not going to have players, and I think they have the offensive line. I mean, I think the rushing game is a strength, but I mean, what, like, do you think that it's going to be as good as it was last year, and how good was it last year for them?
So last season they were a real run first team. I mean, look, last season I think people the fact that with the limitations that Anthony Brown brought to the table, and maybe it's on Moorhead a little bit for not having developed you know Thompson more, or Butterfield more, but they were number 14 in beta rank on offense last year. They were just a really big play rushing offense. They were 13 in effective rush, number 6 in explosive drives. I mean, you look at these guys, like, I think that it could, like, you know, they've largely recruited and coached really, really well on the offensive line. Those guys didn't really transfer out and go to Miami or anything. So, I mean, you definitely like the way they are set up to run the football. I'm somewhat scared. Like last year, as happened to Oregon, if you could, and there weren't a ton of teams in the conference that could do this, if you could force Anthony Brown to beat you with his arm, they were in trouble, right? And especially, like, if you put Oregon behind where they had to throw, too, that was another thing. Like, if you put them in a spot where they had to throw the football, they were in trouble.
You know, we take a look at what they bring back, right? I didn't even mention Sean Dollars. Like, are they bring in two solid transfers. They have Cardwell and they have Dollars. Like, there's just talent here. And with the line that they bring back, they're going to be able to run the ball again. And the more that I'm working through this, the more I'm bullish on the offense.
And Nixon's going to be able to add something with his legs. Because, I mean, I think it's fair to, like, for us, I mean, and for the purposes of this preview, let's assume Nix is a starter. Nix is going to add, you know, like, say 400 yards or so with his legs.
Yeah. I mean, what, you think it's, like, top 25 offense?
Yeah, I mean, this should be a top 25 offense. But, like, the question again is, like, I mean, if you're an Oregon fan and you're thinking, like, hey, we could cover versus Georgia, or we're going to, you know, we're going to be able to hang with, you know, like Utah or USC, is are you able to do anything in the passing game?
That's the thing, because
that is the thing.
So on paper, right? Like this receiving core should be really good. They've just recruited exceptionally well, but they lose a lot, right? Johnny Johnson's gone, Micah Pittman's gone, Jalen Reed, Williams is gone. They lost. Even some of the players that didn't see the fields ended up transferring to other Power 5 programs. Micah Pittman comes. I think I might have mentioned him already, but, like, they lose a lot, and those players were good, and like they brought some of them had pedigree, not all of them did. Like Johnny Johnson, I think, and Red were players that just ended up starting to level up, and, you know, they progressed as they went. But I haven't, like, but even with them at Oregon, it possibly was the offense. But they weren't that productive. Like Johnson certainly was, but, you know, how many times was I waiting for Micah Pittman to go crazy or Braylon Addison to, like, break through, and then they ended up moving positions. So, like, it's a new coaching staff. So, like, it's kind of hard for me internally, because, like, my priors are, you know, I don't care who Oregon brings in. They're not going to have production on the field, the wide receiver position. But that whole staff is gone. And now you have these really high level blue chip players that come in. It's an unknown for me.
Well, so they've been landing. I mean, like, I will say this. They got Junior Adams, the wide receiver coach from Washington, to come over after the, you know, staff turnover at Washington. He's been recruiting really well, but that those guys are coming in, right? Like, so they get, you know, Chase Kota. They get Caleb Chapman from A&M. And, like, on paper, you're like, oh, four-star players. And, like, Chase Kota, what did he do at UC? I mean, like, I've seen this movie, man. Like, he was a four-star coming out of high school. He's not now, you know. Caleb Chapman, like, barely saw the field at A&M. And, like, yeah, A&M recruits pretty well. But, I mean, he was a junior. He caught 13 balls last year.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't, like, it's not like they were, like, USC and went out and signed, like, Jordan Addison or anything like that, you know, or brought in a bevy of guys that have, you know, a ton of talent. I mean, I don't think, like, if you go back through here, you know, like, in Oregon, and there's, like I said, like, there's certainly some guys that, you know, they've recruited in the past couple seasons who maybe haven't seen field yet, that you like to maybe get out there and, like, move, you know, move the needle, like Troy Franklin maybe. But I mean, like, look, if they're starting Chapman and Kota, which I don't think they will, but I'm like, if Kota's one of your wide receivers that's starting and taking up a bunch of snaps, like, I hope he blocks well, because you'll need him for that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that might be the reason they brought him in, right? Just because he kind of reminds me of, like, at least in my mind, right? And maybe I'm like, white receiver, that's big. He's a good blocker, right? That's as possible that that's, like, going through my head with him. But, I mean, like, Oregon has been historically, they appreciate the blocking wide receiver. And Stanford has been great at recruiting these types of players where they're just big bodies. I forget the guy, John, gosh darn, he was a five-star kid that was, like, he caught, like, throughout his career, probably 30 passes, but he was just ginormous and really was just great when you're trying to run the football. So it's possible that that's why they ended up bringing Chase Kota in. But I mean, they do have talent here, and it's
right.
Just,
I mean, they have Thornton, Franklin. I mean, there's guys that you like.
Can they produce? And, like, and the idea is, like, look, if Oregon just blows the doors off of teams and really becomes a program that competes for the conference and competes for a national title or at least a playoff spot, it's because the wide receivers are excellent. And they do have good tight ends. I should just mention, like, their tight ends are a strength for this program. They've recruited well, like, and I think that they're going to be fine there. But if this team gets to that next level, it's because Bo Nix has wide receivers that are open and that he's going to be able to hit and we'll see, because we don't know about the wide receivers,
right.
And Nix has a 61% completion rate. So if that comes together, this team is going to be awesome. This is the biggest question mark, I think, about the Oregon football program on the offensive side. Anything else on that front?
No. I agree. Like, I mean, it's sort of like with Ty Thompson, right? Like, you can easily fall, like, you can fall in love with the stars, but they absolutely do not have the history of producing. Like, at these positions, right? Now, they at other positions they do, but not these ones.
Yeah. Moving over to the defense. So this was a weakness last year.
Big time.
Which was, now, they were starting, like, walk-ons at the linebacker position for a little while. So I get it. There are injuries, and the injuries at that position were pretty rough. With that said, they returned a lot of players. They returned a lot of production. And you get the defensive coordinator from Georgia. My question is, how much of this was Kirby Smart, and how much gets brought over to Oregon? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I do think that this defense is going to improve. I think they have the players, and I think Lanning is going to bring over. I think he's just going to, and you have a healthy, you know, healthy core. But you lose Kayvon Thibodeau, right? Like,
right.
I don't know, like. What do you think about? Let's start with the line. What do you think about the defensive line?
I mean, it's kind of crazy to think of, right? Like, with losing Thibodeau, right? I mean, they were. I mean, did you like Brandon Dorlus? You know, there's some guys you like, but they weren't impressive as a unit, right? Like, they can be impressive as players, right, on tape.
Yeah.
But if they're not impressing as a unit, that means there's a bunch of plays on there like that are not on the highlight reel where you're like, they got beat. And that's really been their problem. Last season, their problem was consistency. They could not get off the field. You could move the ball on this defense. They graded out 44 and overall on beta rank. Their drive efficiency was 118. Right now they were pretty good at limiting explosive drives, and controlling yards per play. But you can move the ball up and down the field against these guys, and that was their real problem, was consistency. And some of it is you talked about injuries. But it's hard to they're going to lose one of the best players in college football, Kayvon Thibodeau, and we're going to argue that they're going to get a lot better on the defensive line. I give him a B on the defensive line. I'm not ready to give him an A. I think that, there's incredible talent there. The coaching should be better. But they got to show it.
Yeah, they bring back Popo Amave. They bring in Sam Tiamani from Washington. So I thought that would be, man, what a coup too. You're right. You pull it from this giant of a man from your arch rival. So I think that gives them a strong base in the center. I think that's the most important part. And then the edges, I think you can just kind of fill in. And they've been able to recruit fairly well on the line in general. They bring in a couple transfers. I think they brought in a guy from Nebraska. I think that's fair. I think it's fair to say that, look, this is a B, but it has the potential to be an A, and let's see.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's that for me. I don't think I can give them a B plus or an A in good conscience, given what we saw last season. But I think they can be. I think the floor is a B, and they can get higher.
Yeah, and if you're making the bull case for the defense, it's that the linebacking core is back and awesome, right? Flo's back, Noah Sewell. I like Mace Funa. He might not even start. Watching him slip, which is a great, right? Most teams, that's a good
problem. I mean, their problem is, in some ways, they need to be, and I'm interested to see how they try to rig this, right? You're gonna play most of your snaps in nickel, right? In modern college football, they're so strong at linebacker, they're almost better in a 3-3-5. So that they can get these guys on the field and maybe send some of these guys in as rushers on the outside too.
That's interesting. This is the Fisher Cup bait, I think, right? On the defense, which is kind of tough to say. I guess that's not fair, right? It's Lanning's first year, but man, you got some freaking ballers in your linebacking core. You have what most teams on the defensive front would gladly trade their unit for. On the defensive line. So, I mean, you kind of have to assume that front seven should be good and should be better, given that everybody's back and healthy outside of Thibodeau. And I realize that's a big giant asterisk. But I think
the linebackers an A. I think there's real strength.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated to watch them run around. And there's nothing more enjoyable than watching good linebackers or just aggressive linebackers that are very good in their one scheme, right? I think Utah sometimes does this. Your job is this. Just do this well, and they do. It's the best. And I'm really looking forward to watching this core. I think that there is strength, but I do want to see it. I need to see it all come together and them all play as a unit, right? It's a team game. But that drives me to the secondary. What was the pass defense like last year? And I guess it matters, but it doesn't matter, right? Because they lose some big pieces.
They're 55 in effective pass. I mean, they consistently struggle to get great pressure at the quarterback, and they consistently struggled in coverage, right? I mean, remember that game Arizona gave him a game minus the five interceptions from McLeod, right? But up until those, they were moving the ball up and down the field, largely throwing, the one get that they get is really good is they get Christian Gonzalez from Colorado.
Yeah.
That's a really good get for them. And there's some decent players that you like. But they're gonna have to step it up, I think, in the secondary, because that was an area where they yes, they had injuries at linebacker, but they weren't great defending the pass last season. The defensive line was largely healthy. Secondary was largely-ish healthy. You know, like they had problems here. New coaching staff, you're getting Atlanta, and you're hoping that they clean this up.
Yeah, and when you take a look at the recruiting, right, like it's nice to be in a position where, you know, you lose DJ James and Mikel Wright, and then you bring in not only like Christian Gonzalez from another team, but like you have a five-star and Manning, and like, I mean, there's just, they've recruited fairly well. It's thinner than I think more Oregon fans are used to, and right. I want to see it on the field. I think the biggest question mark is this. It's the secondary. Can they defend the pass? Can the corners be good? You know, you're bringing in somebody that was pretty good at Colorado. Let's see if he's, you know, like, you know, the expectations are higher at Oregon than they are there. But I do think that there's less pressure on him, like, which sounds funny, right? You go to a bigger program, bigger games, but there's more talent spread across the field, which I think is helpful. And then, like, I don't know, like, what the safeties, like, I frankly, like, that was the one area, and I, like, I can't think how many times in my mind I was thinking of, like, Brady Breeze, right? Like, I mean, that guy showed up all the time. I think he's in the program for, like, 6 years. He's gone, and, like, frankly, I just didn't watch – I wasn't watching the safeties as much as I should have when it came to Oregon. I think that was one area where, like, I just – my mind wasn't focused. So I'm just curious, like, what do you think we can expect on that front and just the safeties and or the secondary in general?
So, I mean, this is one of those ones, too, where it gets really interesting because, like, I like the get that they got in Matt Powledge, who's their co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach. And then, I mean, I think he was a good get. I think he's one of the guys that they brought in more for scheme and coaching than, like, recruiting. And, like, if you go through the staff, I mean, there's some dudes on here where, like, I'm like, that guy can really recruit. But, like Coach Meek, Demetrius Martin, was at Arizona, Colorado, UCLA. Like, he's got a reputation as a really good recruiter. He's a pretty good, you know, position coach. But you have guys on the staff like Tosh LaCoy, too, like, who just have reputations as, like, nuclear recruiters, right? I'm interested to see, like, I don't think that they were super well coached these last couple of seasons. And I'm interested to see if Martin and Powledge can clean it up. I would give them B's here. I don't think it's fair to give them A's.
Yeah.
I think that they could be good. If you're going to talk about this defense as, like, comparatively, the strength of this defense is the linebackers, right? And then everybody else is kind of hanging around, like, the floors of B. Maybe they could get better. I mean, it's not bad, right? And I think with Lanning's scheme and some better coaching, we should also say, like, we are full on assuming Lanning is your play caller, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to say this: if Tosh LaCoy is your play caller, that man was fired by Nick Saban for a reason for calling when he was calling plays.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're assuming Lanning, who was calling plays at Georgia, and was a pretty darn good play caller, is calling plays for the Ducks.
Yeah. And the secondary too, like, I just think the whole secondary, this is the key to Oregon, right? It's the passing game and it's defending the pass, because they do lose a lot on this front too. And you have a lot of players that were kind of in that mid, like, blue chip area, like a lot of 4-star kind of guys that are going to have to prove it this year. And we just don't know. And if the coaching staff is excellent and able to build them up, then I do think that this is a defense that will be very solid, but this could also be the weakness of the defense. And then if that's the case, like, if you can throw on Oregon, then I think this is like an 8-9 win team rather than like a 9-10 win team that's like pushing for the conference title, which is fine, but, you know, and it's the first year of a new coaching staff, and like, they're going to have to build things up and get people to buy into what they're trying to do. But I do, like, I guess what I'm saying when it comes to the secondary is, like, I'm not sold and I need to see it, but they have the pedigree to do it. It's just, can they put it together? And we'll see, because the pass is going to be the key on both sides of the ball for this Oregon team on whether or not you're going to win this conference this year. Anything else on Oregon? Is that fair? Is that a fair assessment?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, like, I think the secondary and defensive line had moments where they showed up big last season for the Ducks, and then they had moments where they were missing in action. And I think that's largely going to be true. Like, I think that it's fair to say, like, yeah, we're just less sure. And I think you're right. And the secretary has far more questions, right? On and Christian Gonzalez is a really good get for them. Like, they didn't bring in anybody else, right, that could potentially come in and help them out this season. So, yeah, I think there's some really good talent there. But they really got to develop it and put it on the field. And I mean, to your point, right? Like, if you can throw on these ducks and this year may be the year that gets you in trouble. The fact, well, last year was not a great year for quarterbacks in the conference. We all think that this year the quarterbacks in the conference are going to be a lot better.
Yeah. And shout out to Coach Meat for trying to get his, you know, Pac-12, stamp
punch card.
Yeah. Turn it
in. It's a free coffee.
Yeah. Turn it in Chili's for your free drink. Yeah. So we will enjoy your next move as hopefully he sticks around with Oregon. But in any case, all right, let's end it there. SharpCollegeFootball.com, YouTube.com, SharpCollegeFootball, where you can watch all of Rob's previews. Rob, you have anything else to plug?
Man, I finished them all. Like, I've done 30 previews. I'm going to try to do Washington this week because I had a Washington fan ask me, saying that they enjoyed the previews and they were looking forward to the Washington one. So there are 36. I'm going to do them. I almost always do Arizona just for my own entertainment heading into the season, so I can get it, like, go through the process I do for putting the preview together and, like, go through Arizona's numbers and what to maybe expect. If there's any other Pac-12 teams you're, like, dying to see me do a preview, like, hit me up. I'll see if I can fit it in.
Yep. Twitter at 12 Pack Radio, Rob Barron at BetaRank FB, and Sharp College Football there too. We will catch you next week and send us any questions. We have a couple more teams left before we get to week 0. So very, very excited about that. And we will talk to everybody soon.